Russellville.com presents the book Lance by Chance, Wrestling as a Von Erich.
Hear how he was discovered, what happened when he was at world class, and the adventures he had when he left Dallas.
Also available, the Pro Wrestling Vault, Volume 1 and 2.
Read stories of the Northern Wrestling Federation, Jazz, Bobby Eaton, Thunder Rosa, Tracy Smothers, Harley Race, PJ Black, Bushwhacker Luke, The Fantastics, Ricky Morton, Scott Casey, Tim Storm, Kamala, Sal Renaro, Jeremiah Plunkett, Andrew Anderson, and many more.
Get your books today at Russellville.com. Russellville. It's where wrestling lives.
Please welcome our new sponsor, Play Action Pools. Go to playactionpools.com as they have launched the newest sports pool hosting platform. Play Action is your spot for all your football contest needs, whether it's Pick'em or Survival Pool. Play Action has customizable options for picking against the spread or picking straight up, NFL, college, or both. You have to check out their exciting new Build Your Bankroll format. It operates as a virtual sports book. You know your buddy who's always bragging about how great of a handicapper he is? Well, put him to the test and put all your friends to the test, whether it's family, coworkers, or whoever. Put them to the ultimate test with the Play Actions Build Your Bankroll. Go to playactionpools.com to play today. Go to the link located here in the bio of today's episode, and you will see how to play on playactionpools.com and be a part of the two-man power trip of wrestling's pool. Check it out, pick your favorite games, and see if you can become a winner. Check the link in the bio for the two-man power trip of wrestling's pool, and go to playactionpools.com and type in two-man power trip of wrestling. There's two ways to play there. Pick your favorites, pick the best, but most importantly, win. So go to playactionpools.com today.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
And now for something completely different.
Hey, I'm a Hall of Famer. I'm in three Halls of Fame. For the young fans, they don't give a damn. They just give a damn about themselves and what they're hearing now. And I got no problem with those rules. I know the rules going in. I'm happy to play the game that way.
And when Ivan came off with that knee drop from the top rope and he pinned me, I thought that something happened. I couldn't hear a thing. You could have heard a pin drop in that arena. It touched me so deeply that when I went in the dressing room, I really felt depressed.
I'll tell you that, I'll tell you right to his face. If Hogan and I, if he wanted to get in a real street fight with me, trust me, he would lose, and he knew it.
You know, that's the other thing. They give you the belt, and they're like, okay, you're in charge of it. I was like, what?
When you mentioned a guy like Harley Race, that kind of legendary status, it's obvious why people would get upset.
As far as I'm concerned, Roddy Piper was not a wrestler. He wasn't even a good worker. If he had to go out and work his way to the top and not have good friends like Jim Barnett. I mean, I'm not saying he's not a good guy. He's just not a tough guy.
Bro, I swear to you, I don't have an ego. Like, I don't give a crap. That stuff is not important to me. People don't know me. They have no idea of who I am. They know of me as being a fictional character that they saw on TV.
People didn't understand that, you know, the guy they saw in the ring that happened to be using his real name and happened to actually be the president of the company, they really believed that that guy that they loved to hate was actually a pretty decent guy. And I think many people have the perception that I really was that character.
Welcome to the two-man power trip of wrestling. I am your host, JP John Paz. With me today is a very special guest, former two-time HWA World Tag Team Champion. You may know him as Dean Jablonski, but he is, of course, Mr. Dean Visk. Dean, welcome to the two-man power trip. How you doing?
John Paz, very nice to be here tonight, man. This is a great honor for me. Thank you so much.
Yeah, great to talk to you. Great to see you. This is very cool. What have you been up to? What's going on in your world?
You know, still training, you know, still got the biceps, still doing my thing in bodybuilding. And, you know, every once in a while I might step in the ring. The pandemic has really put a pause on a lot of that for me, but, you know, still, you know, ready to get into the ring whenever, the opportunity arises. And, you know, working as a director of nursing right now for a great organization here in Cleveland, Ohio. So, life is keeping me busy, that's for sure.
When was the last time you wrestled?
Right before the pandemic. Yeah, right before the pandemic. And then the pandemic hit. I moved to here at Cleveland, was going to do some training. There were some guys I met at the gym that had a ring, and the pandemic hit and everything just got shut down. And I, just haven't picked it back up yet, but do have some plans on getting back in the ring and doing some stuff. That's for sure.
Nice. You obviously you're staying in shape. You know, you're still as big as ever for sure.
Yeah, trying to, you know, again, bodybuilding takes up a lot of my time. You know, I would like to possibly compete this year now that the pandemic has died down. And so, yeah, that's still one of my passions. It always has been. You know, wrestling is, you know, definitely one of my passions, but bodybuilding and staying in shape, health, fitness, and life extension is definitely one of the things that I really, you know, cherish.
Did you get into bodybuilding like before wrestling? Were you into it then?
Yeah. Really interesting story. I was in college and I was working at a gym called King's Gym in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And there were a few professional wrestlers at that gym. One of them, you know, worked the territories back in the day. Chopper Davidson was his name. I think at one point he worked in Texas in a tag team for Global Wrestling for a little while. And he introduced me to the world of professional wrestling, introduced me to an organization called Pro Wrestling Express, and did some training there. And then very shortly after that, I sent Les Thatcher a tape in Cincinnati, Ohio. And Les Thatcher called me up and he said, "You know what, Dean, I got some good news and I got some bad news. What do you want first?" And I said, "Well, Les, you know, I don't know. Give me the good news." He said, "Well, the good news is I burned that tape that you sent me. The bad news is I'd like you to come down here to Cincinnati and maybe start training with us." So, yeah, second I graduated from undergrad, I was in Cincinnati, Ohio, training for Les Thatcher. And as you know, it eventually became a developmental system and all the WCW guys came. And, yeah, good times.
So this was 01 when you started with HWA, just about?
Yeah, 01, yep.
Did you have any, like, real wrestling experience? I know you mentioned pro wrestling experience, but were you really seasoned at that point or no?
No, I mean, most of my wrestling experience, it would be considered outlaw. You know, I got, you know, some training. You know, there was a guy at PWX, I can't even remember. Oh, B.A. Briggs. B.A. Briggs was his name. And he was doing some training. I think he was a pretty solid worker. I don't know if he really did anything in the business. He possibly may have done some, you know, dark matches or been an enhancement guy a time or two. But he was pretty solid. And, you know, I learned the basics from him and, you know, got some experience in the ring at PWX and then moved on to an organization called United States Championship Wrestling. A friend of mine, Sal Conte, who was running that. And, just spent a brief period of time on the indies in Pittsburgh. And, you know, once I had the ability and my parents let me, I had to finish college first before they would let me go to Cincinnati and got the opportunity to move to Cincinnati. And the rest is history.
Is that one of those things when Les calls you and brings you and obviously makes that great joke, the good news, and the bad news, but did you have to pay to go to the school or they're bringing you in and they're almost paying you to train?
So, you know, yes and no. So you had to try out. So that phone call was an opportunity to go down there. So I drove down there on a Saturday, stayed at the hotel, got my butt kicked, got blown up, you know, was sore, and loved it. Loved every second of it. Said, "Yep, Les, I graduate on this date, and I will be here on this date." And that's basically what I did. And, yeah, you know, I paid less, but it wasn't too long, after that when, the contract guy started coming down and Chet Jablonski and Pepper Parks, who is Blade now in AEW, I think, they also got pulled aside like I did and was told, you know, "Hey, you can practice with the contract guys and, you know, you don't have to pay any longer." Although I would still get fined for being late to TV tapings that I didn't get paid for. So that's that's a whole other story. Driving down to Louisville, Kentucky as fast as I can to make it to TV, and being late and being pulled aside and saying, you know, you've been fined.
How much did they fine you?
It was like $60. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And at that time, that was a lot of money, you know, because, you know, we weren't making a ton of money. So, yeah, it was a pretty good hit. That bought a lot of tuna back then. That's for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But like, why the fine when you're not even going to be paid to be on TV? Like, why do they do that?
You know, I think it was, in hindsight back then, you know, I'm a kid, you know, barely 21 years old. And you don't know. I mean, you're learning. I think that a lot of the lessons, the less that you taught me, and a lot of the guys down there, I still hold true today in my life. He taught me to be punctual. He taught me to be professional, and he taught me to be on time. So that when I did get my opportunity and was a contract guy in WWE and OVW, I was on time. I got my butt to the building on time, and I dressed appropriately. I opened my ears and I shut my mouth, and, you know, I learned. So I think that was Les's tough love, and also maybe pocketing a little bit of money on the side. I don't know. But, you know, he taught me a lesson, and a lesson that I, you know, take with me today. So, yeah, I appreciated that.
When you first met him, and obviously after the phone call, when he brings you in, like, what did you think about him?
I thought he was great. You know, he was, you know, everything. I mean, he was inspiring. I mean, he still is today. I mean, he was a guy that lived and breathed professional wrestling. And I also liked him because he was a bodybuilder also. And he got the fact that, you know, there, although a lot of us trained, you could tell somebody who was trained by Les Thatcher. Les, you know, taught us all the basics, and he taught us all the drills and taught us everything. But I think he also, especially towards the end of his, you know, training tenure in the HWA, he taught us to our strengths. I mean, he knew at that time I was 285 pounds. I was never going to be doing, you know, 450s off the top rope. You know, there was a time that, you know, he spent a lot of extra time with me. And I think, you know, again, in hindsight, you know, especially when I was in OVW, and definitely now that I'm older and wiser, the things that he did because he cared. He did for a reason. He used to tease me and say that, you know, my feet were made out of cinder blocks, and that if he had my body and his ability, you know, he would go to, you know, Stamford, Connecticut, and present me to WWE right then and there. But, you know, he spent the time with me. I got the reps in. I improved enough to, you know, land a WWE contract, which is, you know, something I'm very proud of.
Yeah, definitely. At that point, like when you're kind of, you know, moving and grooving and getting ready and doing the training, do you think that, I don't know, do you think like HWA was like the best as far as training guys like you? Because, you know, everyone says like, oh, OVW, and then, you know, they had Deep South at one point. I mean, they had so many different. Do you think HWA was kind of the best developmental training program with Les?
You know, I have no regrets, because I had the time of my life in both systems. They were a little bit different. It was great working with the WCW guys that, you know, were the guys that were left from WCW and were sent to developmental. Cause Chet and I, we were in the main event. We were main eventing with, you know, the Haas brothers, you know, Charlie and Russ, you know, God rest his soul. What a good guy Russ was. You know, we were some of those buildings, we would walk out and we would have so much heat that we couldn't hear. We couldn't hear ourselves talk to each other. It was just, it sent chills up and down your spine. And it was like more validation for working harder and harder to get to the level where you were at the big dance. So, you know, I don't know you don't know what you don't know, but I almost think that in HWA, I had something special. I was a body guy. Absolutely. You know, I had make no bones about it. You know, my wrestling ability was never my strongest suit. My strongest suits have always been on the microphone and my body. And I think that for the HWA, we had so many great talented wrestlers like Matt Stryker, Cody Hawk. At the time, we had a guy named Ray Steele. And we also had all the WCW guys. And I had something different. Chet and I brought something different to the table with our physiques. So I may have gotten lost in the shuffle if I would have went down to OVW. Because when I finally made it to OVW, it was like the land of the giants down there. You know, I looked to my right, there's Matt Morgan. I looked to my left, there's Bobby Lashley. You know, it was the land of the giants. You know, you had, you know, Tank and Chad Tolan who could have hit a pro bodybuilding stage. That's how good their physiques were. So it made me kick my physique up another notch so that I can continue to be that special thing that set me apart from everyone else.
What did you think about getting paired with Chet Jablonski and being Dean Jablonski? Did you like that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Chet and Pepper started to get ring time before me because they were obviously, you know, in the school before I was. And the first time, a lot of the boys that are sort of the young boys that are just kind of starting out and, you know, learning the ropes, you know, you have to work security. So when I was working security for a lot of the shows and seeing Chet and Pepper and Brock Guffman, the manager, I was like, wow, those guys have something. Like, if, you know, anybody who's in this business that doesn't admit that at one point in time they were a fan of this business is lying to you. And if they truly weren't a fan of this business, chances are they don't respect the business and they're not going to last. So looking at Chet and Pepper and Brock Guffman performing, I thought to myself, wow, these guys right now today could be on TV and have a huge fan following. So yeah, when I found out that I was going to be the jock guy, the bodybuilder guy of the group, I was like, absolutely, absolutely. And you couldn't have two nicer guys. You know, Chet and Pepper were just awesome dudes. I keep in touch with both of them to this day and, you know, find them to be, you know, very dear friends.
What is Chet up to nowadays?
Chet is a family man. He's being a great dad. He's living with his lovely wife in Florida and doing the dad thing. Yeah, he's, you know, I don't think he's given a second thought to professional wrestling, and he's, you know, living a great life out in sunny Florida.
Well, I was going to say, I haven't heard from him doing anything in wrestling in a while, but I guess he's done with it.
Yeah. Yeah. But you never say never, because I message him from time to time and I say, let's have a reunion. Let's do this again, brother. Yeah. You know, cause it's wide open now. There's so many opportunities now to do it. And, you know, I guarantee you, he and I have one more run left in us.
With HWA, give me normal day getting in there. Like what you do, what's the training like? You know, what time do you have to be there? Stuff like that.
Yeah, so there were two classes. There were the contract classes, and then there were the non-contract classes. So before you get invited to the contract classes, classes were from 6 to whenever you were allowed to leave. And sometimes those classes would last till 11:30 midnight. And you got there, again, you got there on time. If you didn't get there on time, you were doing drills. 6 and 6, 5, 5 and 5, and you were getting blown up. So you got there on time and you were ready to go. And typically the classes, you know, consisted of, you know, you'd start out with a warm up, which would be some type of blow up drill. And then you would have your lesson for the day, you know, whatever that lesson is, whether it's a spot or whether it's, you know, learning how to take a bump over the top rope, whatever that lesson was. And then you would do some drills that would help you piece together certain spots. Could be, you know, tackle, drop down, leapfrog, do a move. And it's almost like a monkey in the middle. So you might have like 25 guys in the ring. One person gets in the middle. Everybody feeds for that guy. Shoot off, tackle, drop down, leapfrog, do a move. Next guy, tackle, drop down, leapfrog, do a move. Boom, 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 boom. And you would do a couple drills like that. And then you would put some matches together and do some matches. Or you would do, guys in the corner, around the ring, tagging in and out, practicing your selling, practicing, the heat. And then you typically would end the practice with some type of blow up drill. One of my least favorites was leg sweep cover drill, where you would be in the middle and leg sweep cover, leg sweep cover, leg sweep cover, leg sweep cover. And you'd be the one taking the leg sweep cover from everyone and having to bounce back up and feed. And that was, by the end of that drill, you'd have to roll out, at least I did, and I catch my breath. So, yeah, definitely building that cardio. Les was very much a taskmaster when it came to cardio, because if you can't breathe, you can't think. And if you can't think, you're going to mess things up. So I again, am very grateful for the way he taught us.
Do you think that sometimes when he's training you, he's almost not trying to make you quit, but he's trying to be so hard on you guys, like you almost are like over-prepared, over cardio. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you, it's just like, you're almost overly prepared for everything physically, mentally, and everything else, emotionally even too.
100%. Yes. Yes. We need more Les Thatchers in wrestling right now, because Les understood that you are representing him. If you go and do a dark match for WWE, or even if you are permitted to go to another indie show or territory, you are known as one of Les Thatcher's guys. And that's a double-edged sword. That can get you into places and can open doors for you, and has for me. But there's also an expectation of the level that you're going to perform at. And you don't want to embarrass Les, and Les prepared you so that you didn't get embarrassed. When I was younger, I would think to myself and say things like, oh, Les should have, put me and Chet up, to have contracts way longer, or Chet and I should have been in Puerto Rico or in Europe or Japan, long before, we had those types of opportunities. But then when I know now that I wasn't thinking straight, I wasn't thinking right, that wasn't truly the case. I really, truly wasn't ready. And by the time I got to OVW, I remember I did reach out to Les and thank him for what he taught me, because I don't think I would have had the maturity, in 01, 02, 03 to handle the pressure of being a contract guy for the WWE.
When you look at that, and Les is doing that, I remember there's a story about Triple H, because he's a Killer Kowalski guy. He leaves WWE, goes to WWF. They find it, he's a Killer Kowalski guy. They love it, because he has so much respect. It's kind of like the same thing. It's like, wow, obviously he has to back it up, but it's like, oh, wow, you're a Killer Kowalski guy? Really? Like, you know what I mean? It carries some favor, but then there's a little bit of pressure added to it as well.
100%. And it's up to you to perform to that level. Like, being a Killer Kowalski guy or being a Les Thatcher guy might get you an opportunity, but if you don't perform and they find out, this guy's a jabroni, then you're done. And that's why Les was very particular about putting certain guys out there. And when Les did give his stamp of approval, I remember having dinner at Texas Roadhouse with Les the day before I left for Louisville, Kentucky, to begin my journey in WWE. And when he finally says, you're ready, then you're ready. So it means a lot.
When you look back at HWA and all the WCW guys come in, is that like, oh my God, there's too many guys now. Like that's going to ruin, you know, kind of maybe my spot or maybe push everybody back. Did you think there was almost like, wow, there's too much of an influx of talent at this point when they bring in all the WCW guys?
At first I thought that, but here's the interesting thing. Even though the WCW guys were piling in, I mean, and we had the who's who. I mean, Haku was there, you know, Johnny the Bull.
Wow.
You know, three counts. We had Evan Courageous and Shannon Moore. You know, there was, you
Jimmy
know,
Yang, right?
Mike Sanders, Jimmy Yang, O'Hare. There was, you know, so many superstars that were there. But the really cool thing, for the longest time, Chet and I were in the mix. We were wrestling all those guys, and we were getting over. Now, Chemo and ECMO, the Island Boys, who went on to be Umaga and the superhero in training, Maddie, God rest his both their souls. Maddie, you know, I can tell you a story of how kind Maddie was. My first time in a WWE locker room, he was the only one that acknowledged me. So I, you know, think the world of that guy, but, it was a situation where we were right there with them and we were main eventing right there with them. And we still had the HWA tag team champions. Now I can't confirm this, but I hear, you know, heard through the grapevine back then, there was a situation where one of the WWE contract guys found out that the non-contract guys were getting paid, and we weren't getting paid that much. It might have been $35 or $50, you know, a show. And they complained that Les was paying us, not paying them, even though they were getting a weekly paycheck. And part of that weekly paycheck that they were getting as a contract talent was to do a certain number of shows every week. So I don't know why this person had that beef. And they also went to the office and said, hey, Les is pushing his own guys and not pushing us. And, you know, very soon after that, we had to drop the titles and, you know, really had to fight for TV time.
Wow. Can you say who that was? Or you'd rather not?
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's a secret because I think he's said it on some of, you know, podcasts he's been on. But the rumor is that Charlie Haas was the one that, you know, did that. And, you know, Charlie and I, you know, I would, you know, I follow him on Instagram. Great guy. You know, he's doing well. I wish him nothing but the best. And if he was on this podcast right now, I'd say, hey, man, you know, I heard you were the one that went to the office and complained and kind of, you know, kiboshed us getting a little pise and, you know, getting, you know, a little bit of push. And, you know, I've heard him say it and I would like to have that conversation with him and say, hey, man, you know, a lot of us were, you know, just trying to make ends meet. And that little bit of money was, you know, really helpful for us. You know, I know for myself, I was lucky enough to have the background in nursing. So when I wasn't a contract guy, I was able to pick up nursing shifts and work as a nurse. You know, I remember going to practice, you know, from 6 to 9, you know, 6 to 9 or 10 or 11, coming home, eating, going to bed, being on my shift by 7 in the morning, you know, leaving work at 3:30, getting to the gym, training and rushing to practice and doing that, you know, 5 days a week. And then Friday nights shows, Saturday show, Sunday show. So, you know, getting that little bit of money was helpful at the time. So I think that if we had the opportunity to explain to him what was going on, I think he may have saw things a little bit different, you know, all these years later.
Yeah, definitely. With like going back just a second to like the WCW guys, it does seem like that is like a lot of guys coming in. Like you mentioned a bunch. It's like, holy, what was like the plan with everybody? Or you guys weren't even like aware of like what was the end game for that?
You know, I think it was just getting the reps in, but we had a Tuesday night showcase that was just packed every Tuesday because of the storylines that we were presenting with these contract guys versus you know, non-contract guys. I mean, we were doing basically the wars. We were doing WCW versus HWA. And if you go back and look at some of those old TV tapings that HWA did, that was interesting stuff, and it was getting over. And we were doing our TV on Sundays in Louisville, where the OVW guys were doing their TV. And we were doing our Tuesday night showcases to showcase talents. And it was getting over. We were packing houses, and you know, it was a really fun time to be in wrestling, and I really enjoyed it.
Were they like the heels? Team WCW is the heels and Team HWA is the babyfaces?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How long did that last? Did that last a long time, or was that a short-lived feud?
You know, I think that all lasted for a couple years, and then they pulled the plug on it, and they pulled the plug on HWA being a developmental system. And after that, I sort of branched out and, you know, traveled all over the United States and, you know, traveled all over. And then in 2004, got my opportunity to try out with WWE. Tommy Dreamer sent me down to OVW several times. So in doing that, I started developing relationships with a lot of the OVW guys, and then sent me on the road with WWE. Did some stuff in Indiana at the Conseco Fieldhouse. And then what I hear in wrestling, you know, a lot of it's hearsay, but I hear that what got me signed to my contract was the match that I had with Kurt Angle. They liked how I sold for him. They liked my facials. They like how but at that time I was experienced. I knew how to play to the hard camera and where the hard camera was. So very shortly after that match with Kurt, you know, I got my call from Tommy Dreamer, as did a lot of guys. There was kind of like this mass hiring, and Chet and I got hired on the same day, and we, you know, got sent down to Louisville, Kentucky, and started our training as a WWE contract wrestler.
So I remember very vividly the Kurt Angle Invitational when he used to do that all the time.
Yeah.
Obviously, like you mentioned, you were one of the opponents. How did you just get picked for that? Like, is that just Dreamer saying, hey, you should take this spot? Or like, how does that come about?
That was so interesting because when you go there for a tryout, you get to wrestle in the ring in the afternoon, like around 1 o'clock, you know, they let everybody know, hey, get down to the ring. And you get a chance to have matches. And I remember talking to Shane McMahon. I remember pulling Shane McMahon aside. I said, hey, you know, very nice to meet you. Hey, can I talk to you for a second? And he was so nice. And I'm nobody. I'm this big jabroni, basically. And I said, hey, man, how do I become a part of this? How do I get hired and, you know, get a job in this? And he put his hand on my shoulder and he goes, you got to impress us. You got to show us that you have something that nobody else does. So, you know, that kind of, you know, reinvigorated me, and I got in the ring and I, you know, sold my ass off and, you know, did what, you know, I was supposed to do. And I was actually that night supposed to do a match. It was me and Shad Gaspard, God rest his soul, such a great guy, Beast. It was me, Beast, and somebody else who at the time, I think, was from OVW at the time. We were supposed to do a handicap match with Big Show. And we were all ready to do the handicap match, you know, with Big Show. And Fit Finley pulled me aside and said that I was going to wrestle Kurt that night. And I had known Kurt from Pittsburgh. So, you know, I had been friends with Johnny Angle and Eric Angle, such great guys who really, you know, taught me a lot about bodybuilding as a young bodybuilder, you know, being, you know, 16, 17 years old, you know, working at King's Gym. And Kurt remembered me, and, you know, we talked a little bit about the match, and I said, I'm all ears. And yeah, we had the match, and you know, he liked it. I liked it. And when I got to the back, I got a standing ovation. You know, Fit Finley and Vince McMahon were in Gorilla, and they stood up and clapped. And actually Eddie Guerrero also was in the back and said I did a good job. And I got a funny story that I got to tell you about Eddie Guerrero.
Oh, yeah.
God rest his soul. You know, great guy. We were Eddie actually trained in HWA for his comeback after his car accident. And I got in, I had an opportunity to get in the ring with him. He wanted to lock up with me. So I locked up with him and he immediately just broke out of the lockup. And he goes, oh man, he goes, you remind me of Lex Luger. And here I am, this young kid, you know, a total mark. I'm like, oh yeah, you know, hey, you know, thank you so much, Mr. Guerrero. And he goes, no, no, man, it's not a compliment. So, yeah, so it was really great to have some redemption, you know, years later,
yeah.
You know, got to hit him to see a chance, you know, to see that I could actually, I actually learned how to work eventually. So, yeah, that was
what
great.
Did he mean by that, though? Like, you were a little too snug on
the... Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure I just... I'm sure I was way too snug. Yes. Yeah.
Pretty cool, though, that he goes down there and he trains. You know, a guy of his caliber, yeah. And he goes... And I know he's trying to make a comeback, but it's pretty cool he does that.
Absolutely. He was there for quite a while. Yeah. He was... He. I believe he wrestled Matt Stryker on a couple of our shows. And, yeah, it was great. You know, there was... so much talent that went through there during that time. I mean, I think that, you know, I hear that the HWA is considered the lost developmental system, and it truly is, because there is just so many great talents that came through there. And those Pillman shows, those Brian Pillman Memorial shows, were just outstanding.
Yeah, what was that like? Because that's like WWF, WWE, ECW. It's like taboo to have all those, but... Bros, Brian Pillman, Morris, those had all those guys together wrestling on them.
Absolute time of my life. Yeah, so much fun. The Pillman show that Chet and I got to work on, we were actually supposed to work with Brock Lesnar and Shelton Benjamin. At the time, they were the Minnesota Wrecking Crew. And something happened where they weren't able to make it that night. So we wound up wrestling Damage and... I forget the other guy, but had a great match, had fun. We were the HWA tag champs, and it was a packed house. You know, it was great.
Do you remember what the main event was that night?
I think the one before that was Regal and Benoit. I'm not sure. I don't remember what that main event was. But, I mean, the who's who were there. I mean, Edge and Christian, Candido, DDP. I mean, it was just, yeah, it was just a who's who. I still have the photo of all of us in the ring. And the sad part of it is I look at that photo and it's like, wow, so many of our brothers are passed in that photo. It's really sad.
Yeah. I think Edge, Christian, Hardys were in the main event.
That could be. That could have been, yeah.
With Canyon and DDP, I believe.
That absolutely could be, yes.
But it's crazy to think of, like, the talent that's on the show. I mean, those cards were, like, doubly stacked, triply stacked. It was nuts.
Unbelievable. I know there's a gentleman, because I know he had sent me some DVDs. I know there's a gentleman who, you know, has those DVDs available. And for any wrestling fan... those Pillman shows are just lost pieces of history. Just outstanding stuff.
Man, it's crazy to think that Les is able to put all that together. You know what I mean? It's just awesome.
Yeah. Well, he had a lot of help. You know, I know that there are one gentleman who is a very close friend of mine, who's like a brother to me, Bradley Scott. He was working in the office, and I know he worked very closely with Jim Ross to put a lot of that together, as well as closely with Melanie Pillman, God rest her soul as well, to get those shows to where they needed to be. I know that, you know, Bradley put in a lot of work as well.
When you look back and kind of saying, like, full circle with Eddie, thinking you're, you know, bad version of Luger almost.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Then he's congratulating you backstage. Do you think there was like a tryout match? Like, I know you're technically like in like Flynn kind of thing, where it's like you're on TV, but it was almost like, let's see how he does. We love this guy, but if he passes this test, we love him even more kind of thing. Like, Denny's definitely in.
It was 100% a tryout match. Yes. Yes.
Did you know that going in, was there like a tremendous amount of pressure on you? You didn't even think about it.
I didn't even think about it. I just thought, you know what? I'm getting this opportunity. I am going to get pumped up and I am going to, one, have fun. Because I think that's when I perform the best. When I am just like, you know what? I am going to have a good time. Professional wrestling is fun. There's no pressure here. I know that Kurt's going to take care of me. All I got to do is listen. All I have to do is listen. And that's what I did.
I feel like Angle was almost used as like a tryout guy a few times, because I remember the other Matt Stryker, the teacher from New York, he had one of those in Philly. I know he kind of gets killed, but like people knew who he was and were kind of interested in him, but that almost like helped him get in. I remember Tatanka, right? Didn't Tatanka have a comeback match against Kurt Angle? It was almost like Kurt was like the measuring stick.
Yeah, that Angle challenge, I think a lot of guys got signed out of that Angle challenge, including myself.
So how many other WWE like TV matches did you have? Was that one of the only ones you had, or did you have more?
So I did a ton of dark match stuff, but not a ton of ring time TV stuff. Chet and I would go up and do extra stuff. One of the things that stands out in my mind is actually Chet and I were the security guys. If you go back and watch when Matt Hardy and Edge were having the feud over Lita, and it was a shoot feud.
Yeah.
And I remember them dressing Chet and I up in the security outfits, and they did stuff with our hair. We went back, and the person that was doing hair at that time did our hair up so that we didn't look like wrestlers, because at that time my hair was all shaggy. I looked like a caveman. And I remember her kind of, giving me little snips and slicking it back. And they pulled us aside and they said, "Hey guys, this is going to be a shoot. It's going to be a shoot. Pull apart, be prepared to go, and you better pull them apart." So I'm like, "Okay, sweet." So I'm taping up my wrists and I'm ready to go. And I get into gorilla position with Chet. Triple H is in gorilla, stands up, points at me, and says, "Tonight you're not a wrestler, you're a security guard." As soon as he said that, John Paz, I had two guys, one on each side, snipping that tape off my wrists with lock cutters.
Makes sense, yeah. Like you wouldn't, you wouldn't normally have tape on your security guy.
Yeah, that was fun. That was a fun night. So we did stuff like that, and lots of OVW TV, obviously, and it was good times. That OVW group, just like the HWA group, though, in comparison, they're very different. Like the OVW locker room was just one. It was definitely the who's who. But everybody just, so there was no cutthroat, no nothing, no having to worry about politicking. Everybody wanted everybody to succeed. It was one of the most supportive professional wrestling environments that I have ever been a part of.
Was Jim Cornette in charge at that point?
At first, yeah. When I first got down there, Jim Cornette was in charge. And I love Jim Cornette. Here's how dedicated Jim Cornette was to the business and to OVW. Jim Cornette came to every OVW house show. Didn't matter where it was, whether it was a flea market, whether it was a high school. Jim Cornette was at every show, and everybody after their match got feedback about their match. I mean, I was there the night he slapped Santino. Jim Cornette is just a passionate dude who loves the business and just wants everybody to respect the business as much as he does.
What was that all about, that slap? Was it really just because Santino was laughing about the boogeyman?
Well, so again, I was there. I was watching the monitor. So the boogeyman is supposed to be the boogeyman. And he was the boogeyman. Marty is, when he dons that paint, he is the boogeyman.
It's freaky. Yeah, it's not funny. It's freaky. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so he was getting a push. Marty was getting a push as this monster. And the deal was, after he did his thing, he was going to go out the back door. Well, Santino was like in the front row by the back door, and the whole crowd were like shoot scared. Like everybody that was in the crowd that night was shoot afraid that the boogeyman was going to spit on him or whatever. Who knows? Because he's the boogeyman, right? And Santino just stood there, just and Santino's a good dude, and I love Santino, and but in Santino's defense, he was green as grass. I think he had just got there not long, you know, before that, you know, had probably not much, you know, knowledge of what he was supposed to do. And he didn't react like Jim, you know, expected him to act, especially being, you know, in one of the classes. And just got back there and just ripped him a new one. And I think that, you know, Santino may have continued to smile or smirk, and Jimmy slapped that smirk off his face. I think he slapped him a couple times. Wow. Like, we were all like, wow, oof, you know, so.
Yeah, that's a very infamous story, of course, with with those two. But it's funny because it's, like, all based around, like, the boogeyman. And you know what I mean? Like, it's not really necessarily Santino's character, but it was all based on the boogeyman and his reaction to the boogeyman.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And to no fault of either one of them. And the funny part about that really is, back then in professional wrestling, it wasn't unheard of that you solve a problem by slapping another guy in his face. You know, that's just kind of the way it was. If I did something, you know, very egregious, you know, you might get a slap. It's not going to injure you. It might hurt your pride a little bit, but you know, Santino's a tough guy. You know, he's a MMA artist. He could have dropped Jimmy at any moment, but out of respect, he didn't, you know? So I'm not sure how it got made as big of a deal as it was. I mean, obviously today that's a big no-no. That wouldn't happen. But, back then in the early 2000s, you know, that kind of stuff, especially in the professional wrestling industry, you know, I mean, you hear stories about Bill Watts telling the Warrior to get on all fours so he can show him how to do a proper kick, and Warrior bucking up to Bill Watts and saying, if you want me on my knees, you're going to have to put me to my knees. You know, that's the kind of stuff that, you know, true tough guys did back then. And, you know, that's the era that Jimmy was from.
Yep.
So I think Jimmy just kind of learned really quick that he can't be doing that stuff anymore. And I don't think he really makes any bones about it, that he really doesn't care. He's going to do things his way. And if he can't, then he's not going to do it.
So he wasn't there the whole run for you at OVW? Heyman comes in?
Yeah. Shortly after the incident, the slapping incident, Heyman came down. And I also really like Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman was one of the first guys to pull me aside and say, you know, here's why you're here, right here, and your physique. And I remember being in a room with Heyman, Lance Storm, I think Dave Legata, a couple other writers were there. I can't remember if Johnny Ace was there or not. And I remember them saying, keep doing what you're doing. Don't change anything. And, you know, you're not here because of your wrestling skills. You're here because of your body, you know, basically was said in not so many words. So I was like, yes, sir.
What did you think about that? Do you think that's a good thing though? Because they're all given that, and like Vince is known as a body guy. So is that just a positive thought on your part as far as moving up? And moving
up a ladder? Absolutely. I mean, I had very clear directions to cut promos, Ultimate Warrior-esque, why I had the cooler gimmick and, you know, cut those crazy screaming promos. and to wrestle like Mad Dog Buzz Sawyer, because Mad Dog Buzz Sawyer could work, but he wasn't, you know, doing flips and flops and all that stuff. So that was my marching orders, and the office would send me tapes. I was getting tapes of Buzz Sawyer and tapes of Warrior promos, and everything was going really, really well. I was getting really great evaluations from Ricky Steamboat. Arn Anderson came down. I got a good review from him. And then one day, Ted DiBiase came down, and that didn't go so well. He didn't like my style very much.
Really? Why not?
So Ted DiBiase came down as, you know, one of the agents. Johnny Ace was there. You know, a lot of the guys, they would come down every once in a while to evaluate us. And I did my promo, did my match. And then after it was all over, Ted cut a promo right in front of all the boys and all the girls and said, you know, and he pointed right to me. He said, "And you, kid, you need to find another hero. The Ultimate Warrior would have been nothing without guys like me." And he rattled off a bunch of names and just went on this tirade on how the Warrior couldn't work and how the Warrior was, you know, just a body and blah, blah, blah. And I mean, I'm thinking to myself, well, I'm just doing what I'm told. And, you know, it was one of those things that, you know, Al Snow, who, you know, is a great guy, learned a lot from Al during my time in OVW. And he always taught us to draw money. The key is drawing money. Getting TV time is valuable, and to be given TV time is an honor. And when you're given TV time, you must use it to draw money. So again, I raised my hand and I said, "Sir, but didn't the Ultimate Warrior draw money?" And that was not the right that was not the right thing to say.
Yeah, I can believe that. Yeah.
And I did all the house shows. I actually wrestled CM Punk that Saturday house show in one of the buildings that we were working out of. And I got a call on Monday morning right before practice from Tommy Dreamer, and he asked me what happened. And I said, "I'm not sure, you know, what do you mean? What happened?" And, you know, he said, "Well, you know, I got in the report that you were disrespectful to legends. And unfortunately, I gotta release you." He said that, "But don't worry." He goes, "I've been released 3 different times and hired back. And the last time they released me, they took all my ideas." So and you know, there was a possibility that he was going to send me to Puerto Rico. But at that point, it was like, nah, you know, I came here to be in WWE. I'm not going to play that game. And yeah, just took some time and reevaluated things and decided that I would go to graduate school and get my master's degree in nursing. And I did that. And while I was doing that, I was, you know, went back to Cincinnati and, you know, wrestled here and there, and, you know, still enjoyed professional wrestling on the indie scene, but went back to school and got my master's degree, and, you know, have been, you know, enjoying the fruits of that ever since. And yeah, it's been good.
What'd you think about CM Punk? I know you mentioned you kind of wrestled him on the way out. Any attitude problems, or what did you think about Punker?
So I'm the type of guy that I judge you on how you treat me. And I have to say, CM Punk was one of the nicest guys, so respectful. He and I would talk about training and diets, because, you know, he loves training. He loves working out. He loves, you know, diet and doing what needs to be done to build his body. And I got along just fine with CM Punk and really liked CM Punk. And CM Punk, you know, again, this is just my opinion, CM Punk is also one of those guys that has such a passion for his art, for his trade, and those that don't have that same passion, that same desire that he may feel might be sort of disrespecting it or disrespecting him. I think he takes that personally, very similar to Jimmy Cornette. And yeah, I have not a bad word to say about CM Punk. He was a good dude, really good dude. I would text him, you know, from time to time, you know, after I got released and, you know, say things like, yeah, I'll be back. I'm making a comeback. He was a good dude. I really like CM Punk.
With him down in OVW, I don't know if it's true or not, but there was a Tony Atlas story where him and Tony Atlas kind of got into it, almost like you and DiBiase a little bit, where all your disrespectful. Mm-hmm. Is there any truth to that? Were you there at that point? You might have been there.
I wasn't there, okay. But from what I understand, that did go down. And one, knowing Tony Atlas, and two, knowing CM Punk, I could see how they could have, you know, butted heads a little bit like that. And I could see CM Punk being like, well, wait a second. I'm the ECW champion. You know, I'm not one of these guys in the beginner classes. I've been here now for however many years he was there at that point. You know, he's already on TV, and here's somebody who's a legend that he looks up to, like Tony Atlas, who's been there, done that, been everywhere, been around the world, and then some, and back again. Not even taking the time to understand why he's doing what he's doing. And that's something that he's been doing on TV, and it's getting over. And again, drawing money. I could see where CM Punk could have said something that could have been taken the wrong way. Like, you know, hey, you have you even watched my show is what I heard he said. And again, the legends sometimes don't appreciate when, you know, the newer guys speak up for themselves. I think that's changed a little bit now in the business. But yeah, back then that was a big no-no.
I've always heard he was kind of offended a little bit by Atlas, like almost didn't know who he was, but yet he's on TV. So shouldn't Atlas kind of know who he is? Like one of those kind of deals.
Yeah, and absolutely. Because here's the thing. Here's the thing that probably CM Punk was used to. Most of those guys that came down there, like Ricky Steamboat, Dean Malenko, Arn Anderson, all those guys came down to evaluate us, but part of their homework was to know what we've been doing.
Right.
So for, you know, again, I wasn't there. I don't know the circumstances. I don't know if Tony was just thrown in there, but shouldn't part of his job to evaluate those guys, or at least before he would do it in an open forum in front of all the other boys and the girls that are down there, to at least know that he's already a major star on one of their TV shows, you know?
You would hope. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, exactly.
So when you kind of like left the business for a while and then kind of came back to HWA, is that when you and Moxley kind of crossed paths or no?
So I knew Moxley before I even got signed to OVW and WWE. Moxley was doing a lot of training down there, and he was in a tag team with great guy, Buffalo, and they were getting over in the HWA. And then, yeah, and then around 2007, when I left WWE and started doing the indies again, I ran into Moxley again, and and he was on the shows, and I could tell how much he's improved. Just like we called him Ricker. Who is he in WWE now?
Eli Drake, aka Eli Knight, aka Matt.
Yeah. He was in HWA too, and at that time, you could tell how good he was getting as well. So you could tell that both those guys at that point were going to go on to bigger and better things.
Another guy from that time period, you probably known him from well before that time period, that should have made it but didn't, was Nigel McGuinness. I know he had a great career in ROH and a small run in TNA, but injuries and other things happened. But man, he should have been much more than an announcer for WWE. He should have been. I mean, he was awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's one of those guys that could have been the next, you know, Dean Malenko, or, you know, I know it's taboo to say Chris Benoit, but, You know, he, Nigel McGuinness was a worker to that level. And yeah, Nigel's another one. It's a good dude. You know, he was there, you know, he was going back and forth from England to the United States, trying to keep his visa active while he was going to wrestling school. And yeah, he's another one that just good quality people, man, you know, guys like him and, you know, Cody Hawk, who is, you know, gained some fame and notoriety for, you know, his ability to train stars. You know, he had a hand in both Moxley and Eli Drake's training. And, you know, he's just good guys. It's really good to see guys that I came up with in the business still in the business, active in the business, and being successful. Their hard work is finally paying off.
As we hit the wind down here, we'll head towards the finish. Who are some of like your favorite opponents or some of the favorite guys you worked with, or, you know, just some all around great guys that you worked with in the business?
I used to love working with the Island Boys. I used to love working with Umaga and ECMO, because they were so challenging, because they were big guys. And, you know, it wasn't often that the other guy in the ring was bigger than me. So I used to love those matches. I used to love, yeah, there was a funny story where I had covered Umaga at the time. He was ECMO, and Chet was supposed to make the save, but actually Chemo Maddie kicked ECMO right in the balls, and he thought that it was Chet. So we got in the back, and he was so mad. He was like, he wanted to fight. And Maddie was like, dude, I was the one that kicked you in the balls. So, yeah, loved working with those guys. Loved working alongside of guys like Ken Doan. All those guys in OVW were just so easy. They were just so good. Elijah Burke, I remember having like a 30-minute match with Elijah Burke at some high school somewhere. And it was so easy. He took care of me so well. Man, those, this just, you know, Gunner Scott, good guys. I remember having a match with him. Where's in front been? Of a, you know, I was friends with him on Facebook for a little while and then he disappeared. I'm not sure what he's doing. I know he's also a family man. I gotta look him up. Because yeah, I mean, he was another one that just had it as far as like outstanding skills. And I remember doing a match with him, you know, for evaluation in front of Ricky Steamboat. And just after that match, you know, my nose was bleeding and I was, you know, huffing and puffing, but man, what a great match that was. Just lots of fun. Always love to work guys like Cody Hawk, who just have been in the business for so long that they're just on cruise control. You know, they can give you a good match with their eyes closed and half asleep while they're eating a sandwich. You know, it's just outstanding. So yeah, those are the, and as far as like tag teams, I had some of the funnest times in my life with Brian Danovich, the guy who wound up getting a contract and Tough Enough, and he wrestled as Brian Carlucci. Some of my funnest times in wrestling were with that guy. We would just wrestle all over the United States. We would wrestle in Cincinnati on a Friday night, come home, get something to eat, and at midnight, get in the car and drive to Wildwood, New Jersey for a show on the beach on a Saturday afternoon, wrestle, get our payday, eat on the boardwalk, get back in the car, and drive back to Cincinnati. So just fun times, man. Some of the, you know, I could write a book, you know, with some of the stories and some of the things that I've experienced in professional wrestling. So nothing but positive experiences in professional wrestling.
Hey, I love Wildwood too.
Man.
Not too far from me. I used to go there all the time. Love Wildwood. Oh, yeah.
Jersey Shore is a national treasure. It is it's a best kept secret. Ocean City, New Jersey. We go with my family every year and we hit Wildwood and Atlantic City and just so much fun.
Good stuff there. What do you got coming up next? What's next for you?
So, you know, again, training, you know, thinking about doing some of the bodybuilding shows for the spring season in 2023, possibly the Derby Fest in Louisville, Kentucky, and possibly the Mr. Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And yeah, you never know. I might, you know, the boots are within, always within reach, you know, so you never know, never say never. And I would love to go back to OVW because I hear they're doing, you know, great things in OVW. So if I ever get back to the Cincinnati area, I would definitely, you know, hit up Al Snow and see if he needs a cooler on his roster.
There you go. Nice. I like that. Where can everybody find you? Social media and otherwise, if they want to, you know, reach out and see what you're up to.
Yeah, absolutely. So the best place to do my social media is Instagram at Dean Fisk, Dean Jablonski. Facebook is more for close friends and family, so I don't really do a lot on Facebook. But Instagram is the main place where they can find me.
All right, Dean. Awesome stuff. Got to have you back on again. Go
a
little bit deeper. Get some more stories out of you from your absolutely past. Yeah, for sure.
Got a ton of them. What's really cool is I've done it, done both sides. I've done non-contract and contract. And so I have a good understanding of both perspectives.
Yes. So keep in mind, we got to bring it back for
absolutely.
But Dean, absolutely. Thank you so much thank for you. All the time. Yep. I appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you. Great time. Thank you so much.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.